I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
John, do you ever, you know how hard it is to go back to work after a long weekend?
Sure.
Oh man, Memorial Day. I got an extra day because I went and saw a certain movie, but on the Friday that it launched. But
the Friday and the Monday off. Yeah.
Yeah. 4 days. That was nice.
Sure. Yeah. We lost the Friday here in New Jersey because I think we were supposed to have it off initially, but we had so many snow days this year that we lost that, and we lost 3 days of our spring break. And we had a lot of built-in snow days to the school year too, but we had all those like late season snowstorms where we just got hammered and just had all these days off. So yeah, we only had the Monday off, which was fine. It's okay. But
interesting. Someone tagged me on Twitter and they said that they got to meet Kevin Hearn at a convention, and they had to stop themselves from name checking me and talking about my dead on Oberon impression.
Right. Yeah.
That, from Luke Daniels. And did this on Twitter and tagged Luke Daniels. And Luke Daniels is like, oh, this I gotta hear. So I went ahead and recorded a little spiel from Oberon, and I put it out on Twitter, and he came back with, well, those are the words that he said. And I was like, ouch. Ouch.
So I'm gunning for your job.
Burn.
I haven't listened to those audiobooks, but I haven't heard. I don't know how your impression. It's funny, if I do end up listening to those books, I'll probably think that it's you know that his version is wrong. I'm like, that's not how Oberon sounds. I've been hearing Patrick do it for years, and that's not the right way to do it. It's funny with the audiobooks. I actually have a lot. I think I have 3 credits built up, which is unusual because in the time that I've been using Audible, I'm always good with it. But between, I bought a lot of audiobooks because they were on sale at one point. That was a while ago. But then also finishing Brandon Sanderson's book, that was 55 hours. Man, that was only one credit, which is great, but it's yeah, in some ways. And it made my credits built up, and I was considering pausing it, because you can actually pause Audible if you want to. I think you have to jump through some hoops though to do it. I don't think it's that easy to do. But I looked it up, and it's, you can pause it for 3 months. So you still have access to everything that you bought, but it's not going to charge you for your 3 months. So people who use Audible, that is an option. If you see your credits building up and you have all these books in your library that you haven't had a chance to listen to yet, you can pause it for 3 months once a year. So that's something. I don't think I'm going to do it. What I decided is that I'm going to, because I kind of take notes on books now, even the audio books I do there, because you can hit the bookmark button and then go back and listen to it. And I've been doing that with audiobooks too. So I tend to read pretty deeply these days, which is good. But what I decided to do is, you know, I looked up some music and some kind of more comedy books that I like, you know, because I read those books too. I read
it's like cleansing your palate.
Yeah. Well, I just figured, like, all right, these are a little bit shorter. Yep. I don't have to, you know, I might like bookmark a couple things, but it's not like some nonfiction book where I'm really trying to learn something.
Right, taking
copious notes. It's like, all right, well, this is a comedian that wrote a book that's, you know, 6.5 hours long, and I'll enjoy it. So why don't I like spend some credits on those? That way those credits don't go to waste, and I don't feel like, oh my God, I have all this stuff and I'm, you know, I'm swamped in it. It's like, also kind of like the way I do with a written book or an ebook, you know, have two going at the same time, because I am listening to a fiction book right now, but I can only listen to fiction or, you know, anything that requires a little more attention with certain things, with like my normal commute, what have you. But there are opportunities where I listen to podcasts where, you know, I don't have to pay so close attention. I'm like, you know, there are certain kinds of books, like those comedy books, like certain like music, rock biographies or what have you, that you know, if your attention drifts for a moment, it's not a big deal. So I think I just put a ton of those kinds of books in my wish list. So that way I'll probably blow a few credits on those then. Cause I like those kinds of books.
They usually don't advertise it, but a lot of different, I was going to say most, but a lot of subscription services have some sort of pause function, including like your cable or your satellite TV.
Oh.
They a lot of times, like, especially if you're going to be on vacation or you're moving or something like that, you can call them up and hit pause, and they'll pause instead of cancel, because it's easier to restart after you pause than it is to cancel and then restart, right?
Yeah.
And so a lot of those services tend to have something like that. So it's interesting that you brought that up. I've been re-listening to Jim Butcher books.
Right.
And I'm on the third book, which a lot of people, if you read online, feel like the third book is where he really, really got into it and set up a lot of the stuff that affects the series moving forward. It's the first appearance of Michael Carpenter. The Fey court is involved. You see the troubles with the vampires really, really hit the fan. And it just, a lot of stuff happens in that book. So what's interesting to me is I've had that audiobook for quite a while now. It's not that long. I want to say 18 to 20 hours, something like that, maybe max.
The third book?
Yeah.
Okay.
At most. It's probably even less than that.
The first two books are less than that, because I say it's fine.
Then it's probably less than that.
Yeah.
I'm just probably misremembering. But my point is, I know all the stuff that happens in that book. There's a lot of emotional stuff for Harry, which then comes through for you as the reader. And I was voraciously listening to book one and two. I get into book three. I get to a point where I know exactly what's going to happen, and I have been dragging my feet. Like, I don't want to hear it, which is interesting and different, right?
Yeah.
If I was coming into the book fresh, none of that would matter. I would just keep going through it. I would hit that emotional moment at the midpoint in the book and just go, oh my fuck. But that's not what's going on this time, because I know what's coming, and it's like, no, I don't want the feels. I don't want the feels.
It's funny that you mentioned the third book, because I've only read the first two. I have not gotten past that yet. And I have, as I'm sure I mentioned to you and I mentioned on the show before, I think I own the first seven ebooks. There was like a big Amazon daily deal where all the first seven books were on sale for like, I don't know, $2 or $3 a shot. And foolishly, I bought the audiobook companions because they were only like $3 a pop once you had the ebook. Mm-hmm. But I noticed since then, there was a long time where I just felt like, oh, if you own the ebook, the audiobook for the Whisper Sync is only like $3 or $4. So, you know, when I get a chance, I'll go and buy them. That is not the case anymore. some of them are, and some of they do, but I know for the Butcher stuff, I think it went up to maybe $10 or $12 for the audiobook if you own the ebook already.
Yeah.
So it's stupid. I really should have. I just thought that price would have stayed the whole time. And it did for a long time, for a good year or two, because anytime I look, I'm like, oh yeah, it's still that. But I wish I went back, because I have all these ebooks that I own that I had planned on buying the accompanying audiobooks. And I wish I was smart and bought them all at, you know, $3 as opposed to now that they're all like $10 or what have you. So that was full. But I haven't gotten back into those since then, because I went to go buy it, and I'm like, oh, I don't know if I want to spend $12 on this one right now. I was into other things anyway, but they're there, they're waiting for me. But that's funny that sort of the world building really starts
for a lot of people. Yeah, they feel like that's where he gets the traction going and sets up everything.
I wonder if he planned on the series being that long. You know, I wonder if when he wrote the first one, he just thought like, oh, this is the book I'm writing now. You know, I wonder if he had plans for multiple books and, you know, continue.
I don't know.
fine.
I know that the first book was a challenge to, mm-hmm. to write a certain type of book. Like he had a writing teacher at the time who challenged him to sort of follow a formula. And that's what he did. And he like turned the novel into the class or whatever it was. I forget the exact details of the story, but, and she said, yep, this is a publishable book, go sell it. And then he kind of wrote book two while he was trying to sell book one. And I think he had book two in the can and started working on book three when the first book sold.
Okay.
So he was definitely developing his craft, definitely getting further along, because you can tell, you know, with book three that there was a much larger idea starting to take shape. And that's why a lot of people feel like that really sets up the universe better.
Sure.
And some of the complaints of the first three books are Murphy's character. And right. And after book three is when Murphy gets more involved and becomes one of my favorite characters in the entire series.
Hmm.
Because she starts to really get into the supernatural part of things, which before she was just kind of on the edge, and he was keeping her on the edge, you know, for her own safety. And then she just gets sucked in, and rather than run away, just kind of accepts it and decides that this is where she needs to be to help people.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, no, that's a series that I want to get back into. And that's what I've been doing over the past year, is because we have been doing this show for a long time, and because we get books sent to us and all that, there are so many book series that I've read book one, maybe book two of, that I really liked, but because I was always getting new books, I would always, you know, check out whatever the new books were, that there are many series of books that I have not finished or have not kept up with that I really liked, that I really enjoyed. So yeah, that's what I've been doing the past year or two, is instead of starting new things, is to go back and try, because that's the thing too, you know, you were saying you were re-listening to the Butcher stuff. You know, sometimes there's so much time that takes place from the last book that you read that it's like, well, if I go any longer before delving, excuse me, back into this, like I'm going to forget. I'm going to have to read that book yeah, over again. Yeah, because I basically
used to do that.
Yeah, well, that's okay too. And I'm probably going to do that with some things. But as of now, I'm caught up on all the Sanderson Cosmere stuff. Now that's a lot there. So that I feel like took me a good year of just catching up on all the Sanderson stuff that.
And have you read White Sands?
Yes.
The comic? Okay.
I read the comic, and also White Sands is, if it's the Ars Arcanum, I believe, or Cosmere. It's basically the big book of short stories that he put out. White Sands is in that. I feel like, is it, I think there's some panels in it, but it's also just kind of a, like a novelization, like a comic script the story that's in there as well. That's great. That's really where he showed, I mean, even though it was out there that all of these various series of books were connected, that's the one where he really gives you big clues on how this is all connected. There's still a lot to be revealed, but you really start to see how all of his book series relate. Not all of them. He writes so much. It's so crazy with him because he writes so much that he's got however many series that are part of the Cosmere, and he still has got a bunch of books and series that are totally separate from that. Cause I've read a couple of his other things too, that are not part of the Cosmere. He's just a very prolific author, but yeah, so I haven't read all of his stuff, but I've read all of the Cosmere stuff at this point. Where are you at with all of that stuff with the Cosmere?
I am not that caught up. I did a couple of his really big thick books, and then I had to, like you, kind of switch gears and listen to some other things.
Yeah, it's a commitment. Oathbringer, that took me, you know, like four months to get through.
Is that
like
the latest one?
That's the most recent Cosmere.
Yeah, I haven't listened to that or read that. I haven't done the second set of books set
the Mistborn books. Yeah. The Wax and Wayne ones.
Yeah. I haven't done that. There's probably a lot of his stuff that I haven't done just because it's a huge commitment. And I did feel exhausted after the first two,
Mistborn books? Did you
read? No, the big
ones. Oh, the Stormlight Archive ones.
Yeah. Yeah. I was literally exhausted, man. I mean, it was just such a chore. I'm not saying they weren't good. They were good. It's just such an investment in time and mental energy.
I met up with Rob Bedford last night.
No.
I did. Yeah. We hadn't
gotten
together in a while.
You and Rob together?
Yeah. We hang out.
That's just so odd.
Well, we actually don't do it that much, but we do live fairly close to each other. So it had been a while. And we were talking about the Sanderson books and how we like them a lot, but especially the Stormlight Archive stuff. It's very long. And the most recent one is, I said, it's probably the most Sanderson-y of all of his books in that it's great, but if you have any quibbles about him, it is a chore. And again, like you said, that's not necessarily a knock on it.
No,
it's a big commitment, and you do find yourself looking and realizing, man, I've been reading this book for 3 months and I'm halfway through it. And I read other stuff at the same time, so it's not like it's delaying me from reading a lot of other stuff, but it does in a way, because you do want to kind of stick with it. And I really enjoyed it in the end, and I don't know if there's a way to make that better. I don't know if it's, should they be broken up into two books instead? Should stuff be edited out? But, you know, I felt like even with this last one, even though the first part of it is moved slowly, I don't feel like there was a lot of fluff in it. I don't feel like it could have been edited. And I don't know if making it two books would have been better. I have no idea. Maybe it's just like, look, this is a long book. This style of book is long. And if you put the commitment in, it's pretty satisfying, but it is going to take up a lot of your time.
And this is something I've been talking to other writers about here recently. It's the slow burn, mm-hmm. right? And it's funny because there are... If you're a brand new author, you're trying to get published, you cannot do the slow burn. You're not allowed to. No one will allow you to. They will tell you that you have to do X, Y, and Z in the first page, if not the first like three pages, in order to hook a reader and get them in. You cannot slow burn stuff. You know, you have to start with X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. And my theory is, I've got a theory that it's a demon, a dancing demon. No, something isn't right there. No, my theory is that when you're first starting out, you have to follow these rules of X, Y, and Z. You can't do the slow burn. You can't do this. You can't do that. You know, if you want to get ridiculously depressed and dejected, just look on Facebook at all of your writer friends who are and agents and editors who are talking about the things you can't do as a writer. Mm-hmm. And once you have gotten published, once you have become a commodity, and Brandon Sanderson is a commodity, my theory is that they let him do whatever the hell he wants.
Sure.
And I think that's when he gets to do the slow burn. Mm-hmm. And those books are the slow burn. It's a lot of world building, a lot of descriptions, a lot of character stuff, tons of extra characters, and you sit there and you go, why is this character? It's the same thing with Robert Jordan, and people complain all the time. Jordan had too many characters. They complain about George R. R. Martin. Oh, he's got too many characters. And it could be in this book. It could be in a book five books down the series that one character that pissed you off suddenly comes back and has some sort of major moment that the author has been working towards this entire time that just blows you off your feet, mm-hmm. right? It's that slow burn. And I think you don't get to do that until you've already proven yourself with smaller books, quicker books, so on and so forth. What do you think?
I think you're right. And I think an interesting parallel, because it's been on my mind lately, is that is kind of where we're at with the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah.
Is that it's been building and building and building, and what's interesting, and I mentioned it during the last Just the Two of Us, is that I finally did see Infinity War. I saw it last week, and I liked it a lot. And I'm sure a lot of other people did this too, but between Netflix and me taking a bunch of Blu-rays out of the library, I pretty much watched every Marvel movie prior to Infinity War. The only ones I haven't watched yet now are the Incredible Hulk movie with Edward Norton, still canon. It's still a canon. And I saw that. I think I took that DVD out of the library early on. I didn't see that one in the movies. And I haven't seen Thor Dark World yet, which I know everyone, that's kind of considered the worst of the Marvel ones. I remember seeing that in the theaters and thinking it was fine. I would be curious to watch it now. And I have that coming from the library soon. So I am going to watch that. But those are the only two that I haven't watched. I watched every single other movie over the course of the past month. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty amazing how they had that vision. And you know, what's funny is it did take them a while to find their stride.
Oh yeah.
Those first one. Now the first Iron Man movie is considered very good. And I watched that one last week, and that is very good still. They're all, in my mind, they're all good. But once they realized we can keep doing this and we can keep building and we can have one build on the next. And once people were on board with it, I think it really gave them this creative freedom. Because when you look at the ones that have come out in the past year or 2 years, or even a little further back than that, they really haven't been afraid to take big chances. And all of their risks that they took really paid off. You know, because they're pretty traditional in the beginning, your Iron Man, your Thor, your Captain America, those first bunch of movies, you know, they're great, you know. But when you get to like Guardians of the Galaxy, I just watched the first Guardians of the Galaxy, which that one's great. That really holds up. I haven't seen it since I had watched it in the movies. That first Guardians of the Galaxy movie is really good and really enjoyable and really kind of very worth it to watch that before Infinity War. It's a lot tied to Thanos and the Infinity Stones in the first Guardians of the Galaxy movie, much more than I remembered. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. I'm glad I'm watching this one now. But yeah, they just, even the ones that aren't considered as great, they're all building the world. They're all, so they all kind of stand on their own feet in terms of being an entertaining movie, some better than others. But I think especially with Infinity War, you think of the trust that they have as filmmakers, that is like, look, we know you also are, you know, watched the first 18 Marvel movies. We're not going to hold your hand here. Like, we're going to tell this story. We're not going to do a flashback. We're not going to do this. And I think that's I think that's almost the equivalent of what you're talking about with like the slow burn, because they're allowed to do that because they have the trust of the audience. And I think if you are invested in this stuff, it's great, but I don't think you can just watch Infinity War. Like, I don't think my wife can go and watch Infinity War. As much as she enjoyed the Thor movies, she hasn't really watched any of the other ones. So it's like, she's not going to know who the Guardians of the Galaxy people are. She's not going to know why this is meaningful and all that. And I should also say, spoiler for Infinity War, because I'm sure we may end up spoiling some of these movies. But what do you think about that, Patrick?
Well, it's interesting because there was a New Yorker reviewer, I think, who just went out and sort of complained and panned Infinity War for doing all the stuff that you're talking about, for not setting up in that movie who everybody was, for not setting up in that movie what was going on. And they're like, if you haven't seen all the other Marvel movies, this movie makes no sense to you. And that's just stupid. Why would they do that? You know, it's horrible filmmaking. It's horrible storytelling. They totally screwed the audience and blah, blah, blah. And everybody kind of in the Twitter and Facebook spheres just laughed and said, "Are you serious? Are you even listening to yourself? Like this isn't a movie for someone coming into the Marvel Universe as an entry.
Mm-hmm.
This is the culmination of everything that came before it. And that's on purpose."
Mm-hmm.
It's not like they said, you know, this is our entry movie. Come in and watch this, and this is where you can get started. They didn't do that at all. I mean, the entire buildup to this movie was, hey, we're gonna pay off all of your time and attention that you've been giving to us for the last, what is it, 10 years?
Yeah, it's 10 years. 2008 is the first Iron Man.
For the last 10 years, this is it. We're gonna pay it off for you now. So here you go, Marvel fans. And I also feel that when you talk about the formula that they finally landed on with these movies and building on each other, they figured out how to translate comic books to movies.
Yes.
And I'm not talking about adapting comic. I'm talking about the structure of how comic books work. There's a reason I used to collect every single title Marvel had and every single title DC had. Because if you didn't have all the titles that came out that week, you missed something.
Yeah.
And that's what they've done with the movies. And that's where DC fails at the movies, because DC just didn't do that. DC assumed, like, they didn't do a start point. They just said, here, you already know these characters. Now we're going to change them dramatically and drastically and not give you the characters that you know and love. We're going to give you dicks. And not in a good way, Batman being a dick. And so it just didn't work, right? And they still haven't figured that out. They're still trying to do something. They're trying to launch Infinity War rather than Iron Man.
Right.
And that's where the DC films have been breaking down. They're trying to be different from the Marvel films. They're trying to stand out, and they're standing out in a bad way. The Marvel films are doing great because they play a service to the fans while making entry easier on people who aren't fans like your wife.
Right. Well, and you know, you're talking about the slow burn. If one goes back and watches those movies, there are two things that I'm struck with. Number one, how they were building towards Infinity War from, well, not so much from Iron Man, but as early as the first Captain America movie and the first Thor movie, they're building towards it because the first Captain America movie, it's the, is it the Tesseract that's in the first Captain America movie? Like Red Skull has the Tesseract, right? Yep. So that's the Captain America movie is the, I think that's the fifth Marvel movie. And Thor, that's not the Tesseract that they have there too. That's a, you know, the one casket that they have. That's like the Frost Giant's power thing.
Correct.
I don't know if that's an Infinity Stone either. I don't think so. Maybe I
don't
think
so.
But either way, from the first Captain America movie, you have this like Infinity Stone appearing, which great callback in Infinity War when they have Red Skull. That was a big surprise that it's like, oh, that's where he's been this whole time. That's pretty cool. Like, I thought that was a great, hey man, you watched all the movies. Here's a little something for you.
and here's your Easter egg. It's not Hugo Weaving.
Yes, I knew that because he
hated it. He hated that movie. Yeah. He did not want anything to do with Marvel ever again. Kind of like Christopher Eccleston.
Right.
So you mentioned Thor Dark World. Yeah. Christopher Eccleston, who brought back Doctor Who.
Yes.
Right. He was the ninth Doctor, I think. Ninth. Yeah. And he hated being in Thor the Dark World. He hated that whole experience. So it's interesting that some actors just don't want anything to do with it. Right. They get out as soon as they can.
Yeah. No, he's a prickly fellow. Both those guys, I think, you know, that's Eccleston's rep
now,
too.
Yeah, and it was interesting because for the longest time, he did not talk about Doctor Who. He did not talk about why he left. He just said, I left, and I moved on, and I'm very proud of it. And only in the last couple of years since the anniversary has he come out and talked about how miserable he was.
Yeah, he just, I guess he takes these roles and then ends up not liking them and then gets out. Because I know he was in the first G.I. Joe movie. He was like Destro in that.
Yeah, talked about how much he hated that.
He hated that. Yeah. Like, dude, maybe screen your projects a little better if you end up
everything
that you do. But yeah, it's, I am struck by going back and watching those movies and just seeing that they had this idea. But that's the thing. They were patient. They were like, here's the Tesseract. This is going to be important later. And that's the thing. And they do all link together. And the other thing in watching all of these, because as I've spoken about many times, my viewing habits are, I usually have a Netflix or a Hulu or an Amazon series that I'm working through. And I usually watch one episode of whatever I'm working through a night. And I like sort of being in that world for the week to 2 weeks or however many episodes are in a season. And that's the way I do it. And in spending the past month or so rewatching the Marvel movies, it's a similar experience because they do. I mean, it's not directly, but they have done such a good job of connecting them that it does feel like I'm watching one long television series. It's funny that's where we're at with television, where that's a positive comment. It used to be TV was, you know, the second string. It was, oh, it's not as good as the movies. But now we sort of hold TV series in higher regard than movies nowadays. But that's how it feels if you go back and watch all these Marvel movies, is there is so much connection from one to the next that even the ones that aren't as great on their own, it's still fun. They're still enjoyable because you're like, oh, there's War Machine, and oh, there's the first appearance of Black Widow, and oh, there's the even Age of Ultron, which was, you know, considered not one of, you know, when people make their rankings of Marvel movies, it's usually that and Thor Dark World and Iron Man 2 are at the bottom.
And for me, it's Doctor Strange.
And I like Doctor Strange, but yeah, but that one too, obviously that has the Time Stone in it. So that's, you know, you're building towards all this. But those are quite enjoyable because they build. And it's funny with Age of Ultron, that really building towards Infinity War. That really sets a lot of stuff up for Infinity War. And I think that is the problem with Age of Ultron, is that I think that's what Kevin Feige or whoever at Marvel they wanted it to build towards something else. And I think Joss Whedon wanted to make kind of his more personal sort of movie. And I think there was a lot of clashing between Joss Whedon and the higher ups at Marvel as to what that movie was supposed to be. And I think in the end, that's why it's considered not as successful, because I think Joss tried to get what he wanted into that movie, but he also had to do what Marvel wanted. And that's why Joss hasn't made a Marvel movie since that. And maybe probably won't ever make another Marvel movie. Who knows? What are your thoughts on that? I know you're a big Whedon fan, so.
I just feel like Age of Ultron was a hot mess. And I don't know where it comes from. It could be what you're talking about. It could be other stuff. I don't know. It didn't feel as cohesive as the first Avengers film. And they were definitely trying to do a lot. They were definitely trying to introduce new characters, which they have to do, you know, because they're trying to get to phase two, which is going to focus on different characters, because, you know, a lot of the original actors, their contracts are up.
Yeah.
And they've been doing this for 10 years and a lot of them are tired and they want to move on to other things, which I totally get.
Yeah. Chris Evans, I feel like, has been talking about wanting to hang it up for a long time.
He goes back and forth. This is completely anecdotal. Like, I have no proof of this whatsoever. Just looking at the stuff that he's done, he seems like he is a really nice guy. He embraces the fans. He has embraced his role in this universe as Captain America. He and Chris, Not Chris. What's the guy on Guardians of the Galaxy?
Chris Pratt.
There's
three Chris's. It's Chris Pratt, yeah, Chris yeah. Evans, and Chris Hemsworth.
Yeah. He and Pratt do like they trade back and forth on Twitter quite a bit, you know, jabs, and they'll go and challenge each other to go to children's hospitals in costume and visit kids. And so I just feel like he's a really good guy. Right.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's the way he comes off.
Yeah.
And he's embraced this role and he's gone back and forth on like wanting to quit acting altogether, because before this, like prior to this, he's talked about how he just got horrible roles. Like he was typecast in certain things and could never grow as an actor. And he got this one and has had a lot of fun with it. And I think he's just tired.
Well, I was...
That's where I come back to.
Well, you look at him and you look at Robert Downey Jr. You think about how much screen time they have as those characters now. And it's quite a bit. I mean, they both... So Captain America, three Captain America movies, three Avengers movies now. So that's six. I don't think he's in any of the other ones.
He did a bunch of stuff for... Spider-Man.
Oh, yeah. He had some cameos in Spider-Man, too.
Yep.
Robert Downey Jr., three Iron Man movies, three Avengers movies, quite a big role in Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to think if he was in anything else other than like a little cameo. So right there, you're talking like seven movies. That's a lot more than most people play one character through. And the thing is with Chris Evans is I don't know how old he is. He's not as old as Robert Downey Jr. I know Robert Downey Jr. is in his, I think he's like 53 or 54 or something like that. Chris Evans, I feel like Chris Evans is maybe in his like late 30s or something like that. Like, I don't think he's that old. Like, I think if he wanted to, he can continue to. And honestly, I think Robert Downey Jr. can keep doing it too if he wants to. I mean, a lot of the action stuff is in the suit. So even if he gets older where he would have trouble doing the action scenes, I don't think it's as relevant. But, you know, you were talking about how you have to kind of watch all these movies to get Infinity War. I almost wonder when they get to the next phase of the Marvel movies, so when the next Avengers movie comes out, is that supposed to be the end of this phase and then it's going to be moving into the next phase? So I almost wonder how much there will be, if anything, of a wiping the slate clean.
Well, and since we're talking spoilers of Infinity War.
Yes, of course.
And I'm going to reiterate, spoilers for Infinity War. If you don't want to know what happens in Infinity War, you need to hit pause right now.
Right.
Because I'm about to give you a massive spoiler.
Right.
That if you've managed to avoid it on the internet at this point, you are a internet guru.
Yes.
And we worship you, because avoiding this particular spoiler is a huge feat. When we talk about wiping the board, when I went to see Infinity War, they had the big, like, poster with all the characters there. They had that like a cardboard cutout and it had all the characters, and it was a pretty massive display. And as I'm walking by there, I said out loud, I wonder how many of these are going to survive the movie.
Mm. Yeah.
And unless I'm horribly mistaken, John, only the core team survived.
Yes, pretty much. Pretty much. It's the, which is funny because when I went into it, I had the same thoughts, and I'm like, I bet it's going to be Iron Man, Captain America. They're going to be dead by the end of this because of the contracts. That's what I was thinking. And they've been around the longest now.
Well, and at the same time, I also forgot that this was Infinity War Part One.
Right. And so it's likely that, as you said, it's basically the core team is around plus a couple other people and everyone else, you know, crumbled to dust with the Thanos finger snap, which is right from the comics. I've been watching like those YouTube videos where, because I never read that, but I know that's right from the comics. Anyway, it's pretty clear that something's going to happen in the next movie where many of those characters are going to come back, because guess what? Spider-Man 2, Black Panther 2, they're already in development. Like, those movies are happening. Those characters are going to be back. How they're going to be back, I'm not sure. But you've got to assume that something's going to happen I've been, the rumors I hear is it may be some sort of time travel thing. It may be, there's any number of things that may happen, but I think that finger snap is going to get erased, or they have some way of dealing with it. So
I think what's going to happen is Disney buys Fox. They bring Cable in as a time traveler. He travels back and he puts a bullet in Thanos' brain before he can snap his fingers.
I think that's it totally.
And all the movies from that point go rated R.
It's true. Although that deal is in trouble now because Comcast wants to buy it. But now Disney's like, all right, let's see if we can get some cash.
Yeah, but the FCC is saying that is too much for Comcast.
Okay.
Because they already own NBC Universal.
Okay.
So I'm not sure the FCC is.
I don't think so either. And it sounds like Fox doesn't want to sell to them, because I think Comcast made an attempt to buy Fox a couple of years ago and they didn't agree. Yeah. So I think they're okay with selling to Disney, but not okay selling to Comcast for whatever reason. But who knows how that's all going to shake out. But yeah, there could be that. And I'm sure Kevin Feige is chomping at the bit to get to those X-Men characters and stuff. Like, I'm sure he wants, you know, the next phase to include them and to include the Fantastic Four. That's what I'm sure he really wants. I'm sure he really wants to get his hands on Doctor Doom and the Fantastic Four and all that. Can you imagine Kevin Feige with Doctor Doom? You know, it's like, all right, here's the best Marvel villain, which what are the Marvel movies criticized for? Not great villains. Well, there you go. There's the best Marvel villain right there. I'm sure Kevin Feige can't wait to get his hands on him. So anyway.
Well, and depending on how far into the comic book nerdom you want to go, there are fan theories about how they will bring these characters back. And one of the characters who did survive, I believe, was Wanda.
Yes. I think so.
And there's an entire story arc in Marvel called The House of M.
Right.
And what some folks don't realize, if they've never read the comics and they don't really get into it, is that Wanda and her brother Pietro are the children of Magneto.
Correct.
And through licensing magic, Wanda and Pietro were both mutants and Avengers.
Right.
Which is why they could appear in the Marvel movies set in the Avengers universe, and why Pietro appears in the X-Men First Class movies as well.
Right.
That universe. And in that universe actually acknowledges that he thinks Magneto is his dad.
Right.
And in the Avengers universe, Pietro died. Spoiler alert again, Age of Ultron.
Right.
Well, in the House of M, Wanda's power has always been associated with magic, right? She's the Scarlet Witch. And in the House of M, she basically reboots the Marvel Universe.
Right.
When certain people die and she wants to bring them back, including, I think, Vision. And resets the entire universe. And so one of the fan theories out there is that they're going to do some sort of House of M reboot for the Marvel Universe. I don't actually think that's what's going to happen, but it's an interesting fan theory.
Yeah, I think no matter what way you cut it, it's going to be, I think there's going to be some aspect of time travel that's going to get you there for two reasons. Number one, why, when Doctor Strange kind of looks into all the possible outcomes and there's only one where they're victorious and he gives over the time stone. Now he's giving over the time stone because that's the way that I guess he saw that it's got to go. So there's going to be some sort of time travel shenanigans. Also, for if you're following all this stuff online, the Captain Marvel movie
is set in the 90s.
Yes. So there's a very good possibility that, does Doctor Strange travel back in time to the 90s? And is that going to be in that movie? I saw an interesting theory about how, you know, the end, the post-credits scene of Infinity War, where you have Nick Fury and everything, and then they have like the little pager that's going out to Captain Marvel, that, you know, Nick Fury knew this ahead of time, that someone came back from the future and told them, like, oh, you got to get Captain Marvel back going and get prepared. I don't know. I've heard a bunch of the fan theories are fun, I think, if you don't take it too seriously and don't get all your hopes on one particular one. But I wouldn't be surprised if there's something like that. Why else set it in the 90s if it wasn't going to play into the Infinity Gauntlet stuff? So I kind of feel like it's heading there. But yeah, I'll tell you what, if you haven't done it, go back and watch those Marvel movies now, because it's a lot of fun to see the connections and to see how they were building it from the beginning. I do want to buy them all eventually, but it's quite a layout of money if you buy them all, because there's so many now. It's like $13 a pop for 18 movies. It's like, oof. Yeah, that's a lot. And who knows what that Disney streaming service is going to be. I don't know if that's a thing where all those movies are going to be up there or not. Who knows? Because I know it's going to be kid-focused, but I feel like the Marvel stuff kind of fits in there, even with their kid brand, even though they're all PG-13. I know that Star Wars, the Jon Favreau series, is going to be on that Disney streaming service. So I guess we'll just see when that happens. Speaking of that, I guess we have to wrap it up. Yeah.
Yeah, we're running out of time.
I'm sorry. I was about to launch into another whole thing. Anyway, there you go. That's our Marvel discussion. And maybe we'll do another Just the Two of Us after I see the Solo movie, which I have not seen.
Oh, yet. We will.
But that'll happen.
Oh, we will. There's something we need to talk about.
Yeah, I don't even want to mention it, but I managed to avoid all the Marvel spoilers.
But you didn't
with the Solo stuff, even though I wasn't looking for it. I think some jackass put something in a blog title that I think spoiled something for me, which I don't even want to say, because I'm hoping, well, if it's true, it's fine. But I think I'm spoiled on something already, which I'm not as annoyed about as I thought I'd be. But anyway, all right. Well, everybody, if you dig what we do, consider becoming one of our backers over on patreon.com/functionalnerds. We would appreciate it greatly. And we really thank all the people that are already backing us. Patrick, what would you like to finish with here?
If you are in the Denver area, I am going to be at Denver Comic Con. So they have me on three panels, two panels on Friday, one at 11 a.m. That is the 80s resurgence in books and comics and TV shows and stuff like that. And then 1:30 p.m., I'm on, believe it or not, a horror panel called Letters from Hell. And then on Sunday at 10:30, I am on a panel that's talking about the first steps in self-publishing. If you're planning on being there, I'd love to see you. You know, just come by and say hey.
All right, everybody. Have a great week. We'll talk to you soon.
Smoke. I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?
I'm the one in the middle.